I've been turned into a snail, roughly the size of a whale, and I've been lost inside that gale so many times, so many times, so many times, and I've been turned into a butterfly, roughly the size of the entire sky. I grew so big I had nowhere to fly. So many times, so many times, so many times, oh, so many times, many times, many times, yeah, so many times, many times, so many times.
Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to You're Cozy with me, Clifford Myers. Today, we are getting really cozy because I have been hit with the Black Plague. I am dying from the inside out. My organs have become mummified. I am nothing but a mucus slime monster from outer space. I feel like garbage. I don't know what else I can say that will help uplift your soul this morning. But that is how I feel. What happened is a couple days ago, I performed my very first comedy taping at Emerson. It was glorious. We had a great time. We did some comedy, and there was a lot of great moments in the show. I got to meet a girl who willingly named her son Homer. That was very exciting for me. I realized that my haircut made my shadow look like a giant penis. I'm really making some giant strides in my comedy. I'm really feeling it. And halfway through, I got hit with the plague and some kind of bronchial thing. I'm sick. And you know what? Like, life's not slowing down. I still got to do my podcast. I still got a show tonight. I'm going to be sitting on a stool, sipping tea, asking people in the front row, what do you do for a living? Maybe they can talk enough to finish my headline set. We'll see how it goes. But before we do that, I gotta mention, I would be a darn fool if I didn't mention our sponsor. Ladies and gentlemen, today's episode is of course sponsored by none other than the Sod Father. If you live in the Kitchener-Waterloo area and you just love good quality lawn care, you're gonna go to the Sod Father. And we know, we've heard the complaints, but Clifford, we don't live in Kitchener-Waterloo. What are you doing with your life? Move. Leave your city. Uproot your family. Leave everything you love behind. Because you know what? You're not going to get lawn care like this in any other city. That's just the way it works. The Sod Father gives you an offer you can't refuse. If you tell them that you heard about the Sod Father on You're Cozy with Clifford Myers, oh my gosh, he's going to give you 20% off. That is a godsend. He is a modern-day Mother Teresa, and you should be thankful that you're getting a deal like this. You're not going to get anything like that on WagJag. You're just going to get ripped off and beat in the gutter. But not the Sod Father. He's here for you. The Sod Father is going to make your life better. Go to the Sod Father Lawn Care page on Facebook and give him a like, because we're still not completely sure whether or not he does this business. That's right, because it's my cousin Jeff, and he has another job. But if he gets more likes on Facebook, maybe he'll start it up again. Who knows? But that's the beauty of having a sponsor that isn't technically employed, okay? I need you to show him some love, a little TLC, a little tender love and care, okay? Some fat love. What does fat stand for? I don't know.
Pretty hot and tempting.
Pretty hot and tempting. Some pretty hot and tempting. That is because, okay. This entire episode is probably just going to be a lot of coughing and hacking and grossness, but it's also going to be a wonderful time with a good friend. On today's episode, we got Jason Allen. Jason is a comedian who originally started out in London, Ontario. He is uprooted to live in Hamilton. He's been rocking it here, and today he has joined me bravely while I am sick, and we are going to enjoy each other's company. So, Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
I can't believe you're here. I'm not afraid that I'm going to kill you right now.
Quite all right.
Oh, my gosh. And your voice is kind of raspy.
Yeah, well, just in general from all the smoking I do.
Yeah.
It doesn't help anything. And then also, I'm kind of getting over a cold, too. If anything, like, we were just in St. Catharines together. I may have gotten you sick. This might actually be on me.
I'm going to just say it is.
Yeah, like, I'll take the blame.
I love blaming other people for my problems. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, it's the best thing to do.
This entire episode is going to sound like it's like live from quarantine.
Yeah.
You know?
Like sponsored by SARS, man.
Yeah, like it's like World War Z and we're just sitting around podcasting. It's really interesting. You've been doing comedy for, like, what, less than 4 years now?
It's just at 4 years. Like, March 12th would technically be my four-year comedy anniversary, I guess.
Yeah, I find that, like, that's interesting, because you're already, like, pretty established within the scene. Your voice is pretty established. And now I think it's just going to be kind of this continual grind, trucking through of getting where you need to go.
Yeah, just keep trying to, you know, try to write every day and hit as many shows as I can and just learn from people, so.
I've never had that discipline.
To write every day?
I wish I did, yeah. After my taping, I really do wish I had that discipline.
Well, because, yeah, you're in a weird spot where you're probably starting all over again in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
With, like, getting rid of a lot of those jokes and kind of building something new.
Well, the thing is I never really liked the jokes I wrote to begin with. And I like my crowd work, but right. I don't like my crowd work when I feel like I have to also tell jokes.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, like, I like to, like, just go all in and commit to it. I don't like my foot half in the water, half out.
Right.
And so that, yeah, I'm definitely in a weird place creatively. Like, I was performing on Tuesday, and it's very weird when you're recording a performance that you're going to be selling, and you're thinking in your head, do I like this?
Right.
Right? Like, and, like, we're always going to be our own worst critics.
No, big time.
Like, you were at the show, you there was some good stuff in there.
Oh, definitely.
I think it derailed because I felt the Black Plague hit me about 80% of the way through.
It's tough, and it's a long time to be up there. Like, I'm kind of in a fortunate spot where I'm mostly just middle.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, I don't want to say easy, but it's comfortable to do 20 to 25.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get over that half-hour mark, it really starts to feel like work because you're getting exhausted and the crowd might be getting tired. Not to say that they were that night. Well, I feel like the crowd was good the whole time.
I do think that there are definitely dips, but that's the beauty of editing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you did. Yeah. You must have done at least an hour.
I did an hour and five.
See, perfect.
Yeah, so but I'm only actually happy with about 28 minutes of it. So that's where it's going to get complicated, is where do I find the other 45 when I'm only really proud of 28 minutes.
Right.
But that 28 minutes I'm really proud of. I thought it was a really strong 28 minutes.
Sure.
So it's just like, it's like after that, I'm like, okay, now I'm, now I got to figure out what I'm doing here.
You just slipped the other stuff that did okay kind of in the middle.
Yeah, maybe. Like, you know what I'm thinking? Like, I might just, like, do the cheesy thing where you cut laughs and make it sound like there's
from,
more
like,
than
other places.
Yeah, yeah, and then, like, so, like, I just tell the lamest joke, and then people are just like, oh, my gosh, blah, 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 like, losing it.
Doug and I were saying to Doug Koning last night, we're saying, it'd be great if you just cut from, like, where you have a shirt on to where you don't. Just back and forth to that and never explain it. Why does he have his shirt off now? Oh, he's back to his shirt on. We didn't even see him get changed. This is,
that would actually be, that might be actually a funny way of opening the show.
With the, start with your shirt off.
Start with the shirt off and me thanking everyone. Cause I didn't know how to end it. So I just, I have a bad habit of that. When I don't know how to end something, I make it as weird as possible.
Like, let's lose all our clothes.
Let's take off our clothes and make everyone feel real uncomfortable.
Please, they loved it. I thought it was a good way to end with you, like, shaking everybody's hand and thanking everybody. It was very nice. And it was an intimate show, too, like, where there's literally people on the stage.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was very cool.
I gotta take away the good stuff. Like I know my expectations are going to be exceedingly high, which is so silly because it's not, like, I'm not a master of this. Like, I'm not a comedy master, you know? But I would like to be. So anything less, I'm always going to be a little, like, I'll be a bit hard on myself, you know? Like, but I don't want to do it in a negative way. I want to do it in a way that's like, okay, here's what you learned from that experience. Now take it to your next experience.
Right, exactly.
But, like, I think for you, like, I see you as a guy that, I think comedy is your long game. I think you're definitely going to be a comedian. And that's something I've questioned about myself since I've started this, is if comedy is my long game.
Right.
Because, like, I have so many other interests and skills that I'm not sure if it's just going to be...
Right.
Like, I've been really interested lately. You know, we've been talking about, you know, in our private conversations, we've been talking about, just in general, about strategies and stuff like that.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, what if I got into artist management? Like, I would kind of like that. Where, like, I take someone who's got potential but doesn't know how to, like, go to where they need to go.
Right.
And I just get them there. Like, I kind of like the challenge. I kind of like the mental chess of it.
I know. I kind of wish sometimes that I had other interests. The thing is, I used to.
Yeah?
I used to play music, and I used to do, like, I don't know. And I was, like... very much thought I was just going to spend the rest of my life maybe doing music on the side and being a social worker.
Yeah.
Which is what I used to do. And then I got into comedy and I just kind of like, I liked it so much. I stopped playing music. I like hardly ever even pick up my guitars anymore. Well, got burnt out with social work.
I find it so interesting that you did social work because I did too.
Yeah.
In a group home, and you were in a homeless shelter.
Yes.
And your fiance Katie, she's in social work as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I've said this to you before, where I feel like social work has a certain breed of people.
Yes.
And I call this the frontliners.
Yeah, syndrome. That's exactly what we were. It was frontline work.
But it still is. What you do now in comedy is still frontline work.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You know 100%. What I mean? Like, yeah. There's something in comedians that goes really well towards social work because, like, I just call it the frontliner syndrome because, like, you're able to be in the gutter, get your hands dirty, you're there in the front lines. I'm not sure if you're the same as me, but it's hard for me to respect anything above the front lines.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, the people from the office telling you how to do your job, I'm just like, whoa, join me for an hour and let me see how you do.
Well, yeah, come into my world.
Yeah.
Like, see if those suggestions actually work.
Like, I had a situation where I was training someone. And we had a guy who was behavioral in a van, and he reached across from the back of the van, punched me while I was driving. And then and I swerved, and we didn't get in an accident, and I pulled into a parking lot. And the guy was just freaking out. He started spitting at us. He was trying to hit the guy that I was training. Like, it was really insane, right? And then I came into, like, I got out of the front seat. I went into the back. Now, the behavioral protocols that we would have been told, we would have been, first do this, then you can have that. You know? So, like, let's say he's trying to get mad at us because he wants a Coke.
Okay.
Right? So, first calm down, then you get a Coke. But then maybe that you're doing, you know, you're reinforcing the wrong way. So maybe he doesn't get the Coke.
Yeah.
So now you have to figure out a different strategy. And there's all these, like, you know, behavioral therapists sitting with their pictograms and ideas of how to help a person. Yeah. And then when you're in that situation, I just grabbed the dude and gave him a hug.
Yeah.
I just hugged him. I'm like, yo, are you okay? What's wrong? Start rubbing his back.
Right.
You know? You're not supposed to do that.
Right. Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, kind of like... no touching, you were a hands-off policy.
Yeah. And, like, which is so insane to me because these are people with developmental disabilities, not their fault, born like this or receive some form of brain damage, not their fault. Then they're taken away from their families and put into a group home. Again, not their fault. Then you put them in this professional environment where they're devoid of all human interaction in the sense of, like, they don't have any kind of touch, any kind of love, you know? Like, right. Even in the general, just, like, some sort of intimacy. They don't get any of it.
Right.
And I just think that's no way to live.
No, I agree.
You know? Like, I obviously I understand the gray area where, like, accusations or abuse can definitely be... you know, dangerous. But, like, in that situation, I just had to hug the guy because I was like, I don't know how else to help you.
And I feel like there are situations where these rules can kind of get bent or change where, like, it happens. Yeah. Like, there was, like, it was like that where, like, when I worked at the homeless shelter, too, I worked at a place called Crash Beds through the Canadian Mental Health Program.
Okay.
And what Crash Beds was, it was a shelter for guys who had been kicked out of every other shelter, so we were really getting, the very, like, problematic guys, the guys with the worst mental health or the worst alcohol or drug addiction and stuff like that. And they're, like, you're not supposed to give stuff out. Like, you're not supposed to give out smokes or, like, change or, like, anything like that to these guys. But I had guys who were, like, schizophrenic, and, like, sometimes a cigarette was the only thing that would calm them down. So, like, when I'd go to get my cartons of smokes for the month, I'd pick up, like, a cheap, like, those bag cigarettes.
Okay.
And I talked to my boss about it, and I convinced them to let me do this kind of as, like, a coping mechanism with some of the guys. I'm not trying to get people hooked to cigarettes or anything, but when a dude is, like, screaming at his own reflection, and you're able to coax him out of the bathroom with the smoke, I say, fuck it, it's worth it.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean? Right? Like, that's it, and it's a way of, like, because the thing is with social work, your job is with humans.
That's it, yeah. And sometimes, like, a dude's just in a stressful situation, and he does just need, like, a hug or a smoke or, like, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, dude, I know it, like, I had a client who passed away. And that was hard.
Yeah.
Now, this guy was one of the biggest pains in my ass I've ever met. I've never met a bigger manipulator. I've never met someone more, like, kind of twisted in the upstairs basement, you know right. what I mean? And he was really interesting. So, the thing about him is he was very controlling and obsessive over the staff and the people in the house, and he was very dramatic, theatric right. with what he would do.
Right.
One time, tried to stop me from going out the door, taking someone else out, because he wasn't ready in time.
Oh.
So I was like, dude, you're not ready, I'm not taking you out today. So I'm getting stuff from the closet, I'm in a hallway where there's only one exit through the hallway. He runs out totally naked, puts his arms across, and is, like, screaming, and he's not going to let me pass. And on the other side of him is my manager. And so there's only so much you can do.
Sure.
Especially with the eyes of the manager, right? Like, you're being watched, and, like, you know, like, this is a pretty tricky situation because I got a naked man, you know, saying, none shall pass.
Yeah. Right?
So I looked at him, and I'm like, well, I have to go. So, unfortunately, you've given me no other option, but I'm going to have to try to jump you. And it's unfortunate because we know how fat I am. And we know that I'm most likely not going to make this jump. I might fall on you. I might accidentally kick your face. I have no idea how this is going to end up. But that's just what's going to have to happen. So I wind back to run at him.
Right.
My manager is like, no, do not jump him. Right? And I gotta do this. I'm sorry. It's the only way. So I just charge at him, just full speed. He immediately drops his arms because he's so afraid of what's about right. to happen. And I just, like, slide past him all nonchalant and then just keep walking out the door. I knew that's what was going to happen. I knew,
no, of course.
I knew when push comes to shove, he wasn't going to let me jump him. I'm, sorry. I'm grateful for these stories, you know, in one sense.
Yeah. You definitely see some interesting stuff and can, I don't know. It's good that I had those experiences, but at the same time, it was like, I went through a lot of that too, where you get the closest clients and then they die and
yeah,
stuff like that. So, and you do take a lot of abuse at times, so
yeah,
I'm kind of happy that I'm not in it anymore, but I'm also happy that I had those experiences.
Well, I think, like, that's the thing with struggle and pain, is we can appreciate it in hindsight.
Yeah.
You know, like, we can see its, you know, worth if we get through it, but, like, it's very hard for us to see its worth if we're still in it.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
like... it. Like, that's why, like, let's say if one day there does come a moment where I move on from comedy, I can look at back at all this and see what it was all for.
Right.
You know, I can kind of make sense out of the things. Because comedy has caused me different kinds of pain.
Sure.
You know, like, the kind of vulnerability I've, like, brought on stage. And that kind of openness is just, it's changed the direction I thought I was going. And, like, I don't know, it's just a lot of trials and tribulations. What would you say, reflecting on your time at the homeless shelter, what's one of the biggest trials you had to face?
I guess it's just, like, there's always, like, the trial of, like, not taking it personally and trying to, even though, like, guys can try to get personal sometimes or get under your skin or, like you said, guys will manipulate and kind of, like, just try to control the situation any way they know how.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to overcome stuff like that. I guess the hard... I don't know. I guess some of the hardest stuff was, like where I work was, like, there was a... probably the hardest thing I ever had to do was, like, where I work, there's a running train.
Okay.
And there was, like, a smoking kind of area where I'd be out with the guys, and they'd always wait there because I'd have to get their names and put them in certain beds and set everything up before I let them in.
Okay, okay.
To the trough where we had all the snacks, which were devoured.
You called it a trough?
I called it a trough.
Oh, gosh. Because
they just devour everything, leave everything a mess, and, like, run into their rooms or whatever.
The trough.
So, yeah, I got the trough there. They can see the trough, but I'm taking their names. And while I'm doing this, this young couple is double riding a bicycle, and they tried to beat the train. And I saw them get hit by the train. And
no.
All the clients are, like, freaking out, too. Because we all saw it together.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know if it's any of my clients. So, like, an idiot, like, without even thinking, I just start running down there towards. And I've called. And they're like, yeah, we already got the call. Because people that were waiting at the stop train in their cars must have called, too. Like, I'm sure a few people saw it.
Did they die?
I'm running up. The guy died. The girl was, like... in critical, and I think came out of it eventually.
Whoa.
The guy died completely.
So you're just sitting there.
And then I ran up and was looking at them because I wanted to make sure it wasn't, and I didn't recognize them as clients, and I reported back, and then I worked the rest of the shift, and I felt like, why did I stay?
Oh my gosh.
That, you know what I mean? So that was probably the weirdest.
I was not expecting that when I asked that question.
No, yeah, sorry. Like, what kind of trials did you go through? Well, I saw this guy die.
I saw, so you saw this couple on the riding tandem that gets smoked by a train.
Yeah.
There's so much happening in that kind of situation because you still have the responsibility of keeping your clients in order. You need to try to calm them.
Yeah, like, and that was, like, very hard to get because a lot of them came down to the tracks too and were almost interfering. Not interfering, but, like, you know, when the paramedics and the police and everybody's there trying to preserve life, they don't want to keep telling people, get back up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I looked as quickly as possible and was told to kind of, like, get back, and I did. And then I'm encouraging my clients to get back, and then I have to get back to actual building to monitor the clients that are inside now having snacks or like doing whatever.
And that's going to affect people, right? Like that.
Oh, big time. There's no way it couldn't. Like with all those guys just seeing that night and then.
Like, I know what it's like to witness violence. Like when I was 17, I saw a murder. I saw a guy get stabbed in the chest and he died.
Right.
And that was in a street youth drop-in center. And it was kind of, you know...
Were you, like, volunteering there?
Yeah, I was volunteering. Okay. I was the king of juice whips. I used to make this thing called juice whips, which was basically just crystal powder juice and whipped cream stirred together with a spoon.
So you pretty much just worked at this youth center to give everybody diabetes.
Yeah, that was my job. That was
your big plan. Yeah.
Yeah, and like,
is that actually how they died? It was just a sugar overdose. There's no stabbing.
That is so twisted. That's funny though. But like, no, because like I remember I used to have these conversations where like I'd be making them. Everyone's like, "Yo, Cliff, you got a juice whip for us?"
Right.
You know, and like I would always top it off with a little bit more whipped cream just because I'm kind.
Yeah.
And I would sit like funny enough, I never talked about this, but. The night of the murder, one of the conversations I had, I was playing Crazy Eights before it all went down.
Right.
And was playing Crazy Eights with the murderer. I was talking to him about how I should open up my own juice whip bar one day. I was like, we could go the mile with this. I was talking about like we can get Tang. Like, we're going to have all different flavors. Like, it's just something so much better when you add whipped cream to juice. Why has no one sold this?
Right.
And then he's like, dude, I'm telling you, these juice whips are going to be off the map. And we're, like, making business plans
right.
about juice whips. And then, like, a half an hour later, he kills a dude. And like, well, there goes our business.
Right. Yeah, you can't work with him anymore.
Well, no, he's not a valuable business partner.
No, yeah. I wonder if it'd be great if he was doing that now.
Like that's his job?
He's in jail, he buys the stuff from the canteen, and he's selling it to the inmates. And he's probably gotten a few cigarettes for trading a juice whip. Think about it.
You know what, though? Like, if you're in prison... Something as simple as a juice whip could help get your day by.
Yeah, you get through.
Yeah.
For sure. It's a lucrative business on the inside.
Huh. I think I'm in the wrong business right now. I think I need to be selling juice whips to prisoners.
Should set up visits.
Just me walking around with a trolley?
Yeah, and just sell them at canteen.
People would for sure try to get me to smuggle in drugs through juice whips.
That would be the issue. Juice whips wouldn't be enough for them. They'd always want more. They'd be like, no, cocaine. And you're like, come on. Like, just enjoy my whips.
Now, how old were you when you saw the couple getting hit by the train?
Oh, this was like just a couple years ago.
Okay.
So it's like 28, 29. I'm almost 2 years out of the job. So yeah, maybe I was 28.
Okay, so you're still pretty developed as an adult.
Oh yeah, it wasn't like, yeah.
Because I when I witnessed that murder, I was 17.
That's crazy.
And I found that had a profound impact on my psyche. And I don't know, it really like was the catalyst of this entire story. Of me going to Bible college because I thought I could save the world. And then I got expelled. And then I felt, like, purposeless and went into comedy. And, it all seems to stem from that one incident.
Right.
And whereas, like, I had a friend who just recently witnessed someone jump out a window.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You're in Hamilton?
No. But that did happen in Hamilton, and Dan Peters was
I heard about that. Yeah. I heard that Dan witnessed something like that. That's terrible.
I think he was eating at the time, too, if I remember correctly.
Oh, man.
But, like, I was talking to him about it, and I was, like, telling him about my experience, and I was like, you know, in a way, just, like, I think it's important when someone sees something horrible that you can kind of relate to and be like, hey, here's what I went through with it. And he was actually really mature. He's like, yeah, I don't like what I witnessed. He's like, but I'm also not a teenager. I can... process this.
Sure. Yeah.
And I thought that was a really mature kind of view. that he was like, yeah, I saw a guy splatter, but I'm going to process it.
Yeah, and I feel like it was kind of the same for me. Like, it was very disturbing that night, but at the same time, it was like, that happens in London especially. There's a lot of trains that run through the city, and people always think that they can beat them. A lot of people roll the dice. My buddy Chad saw it happen to a guy in another part of the city, I think like a year before I saw it. You know what I mean? So it's like I already knew somebody who had gone through that too.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And witnessed something messed up like that. And it's just like,
do you guys have like a train death support group? Like,
there wasn't really, no. Nothing was really done. I could have probably looked into stuff at work and gotten help with it, but I pretty much just like, I talked to Katie and I told a few friends, like I let Chad know, and you know what I mean, and you kind of process it and move on. And again, like I'm 28 at the time, so it wasn't the first like messed up thing that I'd seen. I've been in the field for a while, and I was kind of like even in that life in a sense when I was younger.
Oh, really?
With how like so? Homelessness and like
so you were drug homeless addiction yourself?
And stuff like that. Yeah, so it's not like it wasn't the first time I saw some messed up shit.
I didn't know you dealt with drug addiction.
Yes, yeah.
What was your poison of choice?
Crystal meth.
Really?
Yeah, not for like very long, because it's like one of those drugs where it's like it doesn't take very long to start ruining your life, and then you either change or you die.
Like, obviously, I only know about crystal meth from the glorification of Breaking Bad, right? Sure. And
it's exactly what it's like.
Yeah?
In case you're, I am the real Walter White.
Yeah, then you're him?
No, I didn't sell it. I'm not that smart.
You're,
I was not
lucrative. You're more one of Jesse Pinkman's friends?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly, one of his sad buddies.
Yeah.
He's like always around.
That's just like, yo, let's just get a bomb. We'll get a bomb, come man. On. Well, the thing about like addiction, because like for me, alcohol was my vice, but I've always said that anything could be my vice.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, like, I got lucky with Lindsay that she is, in a way, a moral compass. Because, like, I had this conversation when I was getting expelled from Bible college where a theologian, this guy who has his doctorate in theology, and he sat me down and he was lecturing me about my behavior. And he was telling me that, like, biblically, there is verses that describe myself, which is a person with a seared conscience, that like my conscience has been seared. I don't have a sense of morality, and I don't know how true that is. I do think I'm empathic, and I do think I have a conscience.
Right.
I do think I have a sense of morality. It just I didn't have his.
Right.
And that's where he made it sound like all my nerve endings were burnt off, and I didn't have a chance. Right.
Yeah.
And like, so I thought of that idea of a seared conscience, and like, there was a time where, when I was first starting comedy, I was performing at Doors Pub, and there was a guy in the washroom who took out a locket and unscrewed it and did a bump of cocaine off his thumb.
Right.
And he's like, hey, do you want some, man? And the first thought in my head wasn't, hey, Cliff, you should probably not do cocaine off this guy's thumb in this greasy Hamilton washroom.
Right.
My first thought was, Lindsay will be mad at you if you do this.
Right.
You know? And I know, like it was weird that I thought of Lindsay's reaction, but she's kind of been my moral compass, because she's really good at being like, because I can be very impulsive and very, very susceptible.
Yeah.
I've always been kind of one of those people that, like, I wanted to fit in so bad. Okay, maybe doing coke off your thumb is what's going to make me fit in.
Right.
Right? And so, like, I could easily see myself falling into something like coke, crack, crystal meth. Like, if the
right
situation was presented, now I don't see that for myself. I just don't see a situation where I get into crystal meth.
Sure.
You
have a lot now.
Yeah, I have a family.
You have a whole family.
I have a career I'm working on.
Absolutely.
Like, I have,
like, and that was the thing. Like, that's why I'm not really worried that I'm going to ever go back to that.
Yeah.
Because I have stuff to lose now. Like, Katie and I are now engaged.
Congratulations, by the way. That is awesome. I'm so happy to find another monogamous comedian.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, shit's kind of picking up with comedy and stuff's been cool. So it's not worth it. So I don't really get tempted by that stuff. But I still, like... I'll drink a night of the week when maybe I shouldn't, and I could rope it in a bit more, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I still have, like, my party vices at times that I...
That you still kind of give into?
Yeah. I don't, like, not every night, but you gotta watch it, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll always have to kind of watch myself.
And, like, I think that's typical with anyone that struggles with addiction, is you always kind of got to put yourself in check. Yeah. Like me, I'm actually in a very dangerous position where I got nothing. I'm completely raw right now. I'm not even medicating through pharmaceuticals.
Right. Yeah, you literally have, like, you gave up all those vices.
I have all those vices gone. So that means, like, now I'm just, like shaking for a vice. Like, I want a vice so bad because I have no compensation.
Right. Well, Game of Thrones is coming back on.
I don't like Game of Thrones.
You don't like Game of Thrones?
No. Here's why. Because I think it's weird that us as a culture is accepted that we're going to sit in our living rooms and watch rape on television.
Okay, it's not like it's like rape.
There's
rape,
a lot rape, of rape. Rape. There's a ton of rape.
It was part of that world, though. It was part of those times. And it is something that happens in our society.
In my time, I don't want to sit here and watch rape.
But rape is real. It happens. It's in...
Sure. But I'd rather watch My Little Pony and, like, Big Brother. Like, I don't know what you psychos are doing. Like, I'm not going to sit here and watch people's heads get crushed with bare hands and people get raped on their wedding nights.
It seems like you do watch it. You know all the stuff that's happening.
I backed out at, like, the episode I backed out on was the Sansa episode when she got raped on her wedding night.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That's when I was like, how is that my line? But that was my line.
If you didn't get to... You didn't get to continue watching and see that she got revenge on that guy.
Well, yeah, like, I'm sure
that's
she did.
Awesome.
I'm overly sensitive to that material on television. Yeah. So, like, it's really hard for me to watch it. Like, I just finished The Good Wife.
Yes.
What a great show.
Yeah, I used to be into that show.
The series finale was garbage.
Oh. I didn't carry on with it. I don't know why. But I also don't have cable.
Well, it's on Netflix right now.
Oh, maybe I should watch the rest then.
Do it, man.
Get back into it. Do you ever watch the show Suits?
Yeah, like I've started watching Suits. That. See, too. It's that kind of like fluffy,
it's
procedural.
Fluff. It's fluff. Yeah.
Yeah. I do enjoy fluff. Like, see, the thing is like I'm really into Survivor, right? And I've been the newest season, Game Changers, is an all-star season, and. Like, I love it so much because, like, Survivor to me is a microcosm of human behavior. It's just, like, you put people in this bottled situation and you just see, like, their humanity come out. And it's sometimes hilarious. It's sometimes heartbreaking. But I like that kind of stuff. I just find with Game of Thrones, the hyper-realism, I just think that there's a sense of, like, oh, we can get away with anything now, so let's do it. And I still appreciate subtlety, right. Which is ironic because I just finished a comedy taping by taking off my clothes and grabbing the onions. So, like, I sense the irony in what I'm saying, but I do appreciate subtlety in artists that are more disciplined than I.
Right, I see what you're saying. So it's okay as long as it's just alluded to.
Well, and here's my point is, okay, I think the best, and this is such a weird sentence, but the most well done rape scene is in the movie City of God.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
Okay, so there's a bus driver, they take him, these gangsters, and they're going to rape his wife. They throw him on the ground and they put his foot on his head and they hold his head down. And then you see it from the view of his eyes on the ground sideways. And all you see is the doorway. And you see the guys dragging the wife into the room. You see some legs flail. You hear things. You know what's happening. But you, what you mostly hear is the guy breathing and crying and screaming. And he can't do anything about this. And that was an artistic choice that took a serious situation and didn't, like, be like, hey, look at all of it.
Right.
You know? Like I thought that was, like, tasteful in a way. Well, like, if you had to depict it.
Right.
You know? Like, yeah. And I understand, like, if you're making a movie talking about the truths of Rio de Janeiro, like, yeah, maybe you do have to depict it. You should really watch City of God. It's one of the best movies ever made.
Let's check it out.
It's one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah?
I'm telling you right now.
Okay.
And then go watch Amelie, since you'll be on a foreign movie kick. Because that was a real juicer. Like, I want to kind of, like, backpedal a sec here. Because, like, I just feel like we can't just, like, casually mention, like, crystal meth and just keep walking.
And then go right into rape on TV.
Because, like, I am interested in, like, did you ever feel the physical effects of it? Like, did it ever hurt your gums, your teeth?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, so, like, what is it? Is it, like, I know they call it glass, but what is it physically?
It's just man-made. It's just a lot of, like, it comes from the Speed family.
Yeah.
And kind of, like,
And what's that high like? Does it give you, like, just this, like, oh, I can do anything?
Yes, essentially. And then you do nothing.
And then you do nothing.
You, like, or you, like, you tweak, you focus on, like, one thing. So you think you're going to get a lot done and then kind of just focus in on something for, like, a bunch of hours.
Yeah.
And don't really accomplish
anything.
And you always, like, it's all endorphins, right? So it's all a trick. You never really feel good off the drug.
But, like, it's kind of like,
but you do, because it's like it's increasing your endorphins. But really, the drug doesn't do anything good for you. Like, I understand. Yeah. I understand certain drugs. Like, I understand steroids. It's like, you're going to get, not that, like, I've ever done anything like that, clearly.
You do not look like someone on steroids. You're so lanky.
But, like, I understand that, like, guys, they strive to be better in, like, athletics or whatever else.
Yeah.
So I understand steroids. But meth and, like, coke and, like, anything like that, oxy, stuff like that, it's just a mind fuck. Well, yeah. Oxys, it's a bit different, I guess, because oxys will, like, kill pain.
Yeah. Like, it's a numbing agent, right? Like,
yeah, where coke and meth don't even do that. They really do just give you, like, a false sense of euphoria for a bit, and then it goes away, and then you're miserable. Like, because the come down is brutal.
I was in a situation after a comedy show where, like, it was, like, a bigger event, and a bunch of us were back at the comedy condo, and there was a couple comics that did a ton of coke.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of a weird, funny situation, because I was sitting down playing an online Big Brother game with friends from all over the world. Right. I had friends in Philippines and London and all this and that, and I'm trying to play Big Brother. And these guys are coked out, and they were getting kind of emotional.
Right.
I guess that happens.
Yeah, that can happen.
Yeah, and, like, talking about some childhood trauma. And the one guy, you know, for those in the comedy scene, you'll know who I'm talking about. But, like, the one guy was dying.
Right.
And he was talking to me about mortality. And he was high and talking about mortality. And, you know, he said to me, and, like, it was a little over-emotional, but he was saying, like, you know, like, look at you with a wife. You're trying to start a family. This was before I had a kid, right?
Right.
Like, you're trying to start a family. You're, like, happy. You have love. And this was at a moment in my life where I was just so dissatisfied with everything. And this guy wanted what I had, and he couldn't even go for it because he was going to be dead in less than a year.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that really made me see myself as a selfish prick. It really made me see myself as, like, oh, I'm kind of, like, I got to kind of dial it back and look at, like, you know, be a little bit appreciative of the good things right. I have here. And, like, especially where we've come from, like, it's, you know, in your adult life, you kind of come into your own. And I'll never forget that night because I couldn't sleep in there because they were, like, jumping on the couches and stuff. So I went in. The only room that could have me had a wasp's nest in it. So I went into the I called it the B room. And so I went into the B room. I tucked the single sheet that I had to use as a blanket.
Is this the condo, or was this a place before the condo?
This was in Windsor. This was at the
yes,
the
two apartments. I understand. So it's the condo that's right near the club?
Yeah. So okay. This is Johnny P's apartment now.
Yes.
So like his apartment now, the one room had a wasp's nest in it.
Oh my god.
And like Johnny still remembers this and thinks it's hilarious. But like I had the one sheet and I tucked myself underneath. Like I just like wrapped myself up like a mummy. And I could just hear like the you know, as I'm trying to sleep.
And the, terrifying.
And then, you know, sometimes in comedy, that's your choice. You got to choose between.
No, absolutely.
Do I go with the cokeheads or the bees?
Right.
Oh, we're actually doing a pretty good job at not completely hacking a lung.
No,
on
it's just once in a while we just take a break where we clear our throats, like super disgustingly, and then just get back in.
I feel like people are gonna be like, "I like the episode, but sometimes it just got gross."
For a while, it got super gross.
Not even the conversation of rape on TV or people dying by being splattered by a train.
That happens.
Was the coughing.
Yeah,
you know, and like I guess like a way to wind this down is just to like say like a lot of what I talk about on this podcast is kind of like how I'm trying to fathom what society's become.
Sure.
And, like, you know, when I think of what society used to be, like, at its most simplest form, if it was a family on a hill trying to provide for themselves, you know, and
right.
You always had the other people were always dangers.
Right.
Right? Foreign objects or things that, like, yeah, foreign introductions were dangers. So it might have been, like, fire at one point, or swordsmithing at one point, or ammo. You know, there always seems to be a new weapon, a new thing that can hurt people. And people make that, right?
Yeah.
Just like you said, like I said, what's meth made out of? You said it's made by people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we're in this weird time where we have it good. You know, we have it good.
Oh yeah, big time.
But like, even the things we make on TV are depicting the worst of humanity. The things we watch for fun depict the worst of us.
Yes. People are entertained by pain.
Weird.
It is weird.
That's not right.
But people like it. Everybody like kind of, I pique everybody's interest when I say I used to be homeless or addicted to drugs. Oh, really? Tell me about, you know what I mean? Everybody kind of does. People want to kind of know about the struggle. They're glad that I'm not in it anymore, but they want to hear about what happened.
Right? I always noticed that in testimonies in the church that we were always interested in testimonies that came with some pain. And testimonies that were just like, yeah, I went to Christian camp. I was raised in a Christian family, and now I'm a Christian. Everyone with an eye roll, like, oh, come on, give me someone with a heroin addiction that got kicked out of the army.
Right.
Come on.
Exactly.
Right? Like, it's so weird that, like, yeah, and, like, I was looking up a while ago my natal birth sign. Like, I wanted to look past the whole Pisces thing. I don't even believe in horoscopes,
right. But
I find this stuff interesting. And one of the things it said in my natal birth sign was that I glorified pain. And, yeah, I was just like, oh my gosh, natal birth signs are so correct. Until you realize that all of humanity glorifies pain.
Right.
to some sense or another.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, there's always been that sense of no pain, no gain. Like, you know,
you're
like,
tough if you've been through a lot. Or like,
yeah, like, you're like wiser. Yeah, you're more... Yeah. And maybe this is just a giant mirage. Because, like, you know, like, oh, I'm... What, am I tough shit because I saw a murder?
Yeah.
There are kids in Uganda that see murders every other day.
Sure.
Like, am I a real G? You know, like... Exactly. Like, I almost did coke once in a washroom. Am I really struggling? I had alcohol addiction for, like, you know, 6 to 8 years. Yeah. But, like, I'm 31 and figuring it out. Like, at 31, when there's people that are riddled with alcoholism in their 60s, 70s, 80s, never escape it.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's so funny how, we almost wear it as a badge of honor.
It's weird. And really, I think that there's nothing tough about doing drugs. I think it's the biggest myth in the world.
Yeah.
That you're hardcore because you did drugs. I think it's way more hardcore to just face reality.
Oh my gosh.
And I think people that don't do drugs are like should be the ones that are considered the badasses. And I'm not even necessarily anti-drug. If you want to get fucked up, get fucked up. Like, that's your life. Like, I drink sometimes. Or like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Live your life. But I just hate people that have, like, this ego or think that they're, like, a badass because they get messed up.
And that's actually, like, the ones that are badass are the ones that just face reality.
That are just, like, every day, they just get up and they do what they have to do.
That is hard. Like I wish I could numb everything because, like, it's too much. Sure,
because that's easy.
Yeah.
Numbing is way easier. Crystal meth was the easiest.
I think you just
pay for it, and then you'd feel good in that moment.
I just talked about that on a podcast. I don't know if it was mine or Dean Blundell's, but, like, it just said, like, everything, everything bad in life is easy.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's easy to drink your pain away. It's easy to do drugs to... Yeah, you buy it and you feel better. It's easy to run away from problems instead of facing them.
Yeah.
Everything, like, worth it, everything good is hard. Like, like marriage, you're about to be married. And it's going to take a lot of work. You and Katie are going to have a lot of, sometimes you're going to be so close and you're going to be inseparable. And sometimes you're going to feel so distant, you don't even know how you even know each other.
Right.
Like, that happens. And you work through it, and you face that raw. And that's the kind of thing, like, that's where you're going to see yourself becoming a badass, when you're in a marriage.
Right.
And you're really, like, fighting for love. Because, like, it's not easy. And when you have a kid in the mix, it gets even more harder.
Oh,
like,
yeah, for sure.
Lindsay and I, we've been having so many conversations as we readjust to our new normal.
Right.
Right? It's crazy, like... I think you're about to be on that journey, but, like, it's great to hear that you have overcome that stuff, but it's also great to hear that you're not necessarily glorifying it as a badge of honor, that you seem to have an interesting perspective on pain. Like, even the fact that you continued your shift after the train incident.
Yeah.
It's almost like your entire comedy career is continuing the shift.
Yeah, in a way, I guess.
You know, like, you went through some shit. And like, we didn't even get into your family life, which is incredibly interesting. But, like, you know, like, you've just been through a lot of stuff, but you're still going. You still go on stage and you rock it like no one's business.
Yeah, just try to keep... I don't know. It's just better to keep moving forward than...
Yeah.
Like, obviously, people should talk about what... is bothering them or, like, what they're going through or whatever else, but you definitely see a lot of people where they're, like, they're not really working on it, they're just dwelling on it.
Yeah.
So it's, like, either work on it or work on something.
Well,
move forward and keep busy, you know what I mean?
And I'll probably end here, but, like, I had someone approach me a couple years ago, and she was saying, like, you know, she was having problems with drugs and alcohol. And this same person's approached me time and time again with the same sort of complaints. I've hit rock bottom. I've hit rock bottom. I've hit rock bottom. And I was just like, go do something about it. Like, you love talking to me about it. You love talking. You love to talk to me about it because I've been through it. But I've been through it. I went and tried to do something about it. And I came off like a giant prick. Like, I was like, stop talking. Go do it. And then she was like, oh, I thought you were a friend, and blocked me on the spot.
Right.
And then, like, since then, she's tried to re-add me. And I'm just like, I will not enable you at all in this. And I just, I've iced her.
Right.
Because, you know what? Like, we can't be making other people's problems our problems. We have enough of our own problems.
True.
So, like, I know it's, like, people sometimes think support is like, oh, I'm going to use other people as, like, a foundation or a stage to stand on. When it's like, no, there are just people that are around you that are there for a quick, like, pop in, help, pop out. Like, they're not there to lift you up. They're just there. Like, you can't lean on them, right? It's really interesting. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
Now, where can people find you online?
Oh, you can find me at Twitter at Jason A. Comedy and Instagram at Jason A. Comedy.
I really wanted them to see you live because you have a very specific comedy voice and presentation. And like you're very low-key right now, but when you're on stage, you got a bit more of a character going on.
Right.
And I would love them to hear this podcast, like how just like...
How depressing it is.
Just, and then, like, I thought it was like pretty low-key. And like, I wouldn't say depressing. I would say more illuminating. I think these are good conversations to have. But, like, it's good that you're turning it into comedy. Like, that's just, like...
Yeah.
Like, I guess that would be the hard thing. Like, just taking it and transferring it, right? Like... But that's what comedians do.
Yeah.
Jason, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Thanks for having me. This has been good. We didn't cough too much, folks. I just want to thank you all for listening to the podcast and remind you that you can also listen to my other podcast. It's a strategy podcast called At Home Diaries, and you can get it at homediaries.com or subscribe on iTunes 4 days a week. Usually between 10 to 20 minutes, I do an episode just about strategies, dissecting, extracting, exploring the strategic life. And I really feel like you guys would, if you enjoy this podcast, that's a way of having me in doses where I talk more about just like kind of like falsely intellectualizing how I see the world. And then like a week later, I'll see how I'm wrong and make an episode about that or something. So it's great. Jason, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks again for having me.
All right. You guys take care. I'll see you next Friday, and where we'll have another great guest. You've been listening to You're Cozy with Clifford Myers and my guest, Jason Allen. Thanks. Have a good weekend.